Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Welcome, everybody, to Behind the Game, Kids in the Game official podcast. This is Paul O'Connor. On episode 17, we were joined by Austin Zoutwell. She is the Expansion Policy and Performance Coordinator at the New York City Department of Education. Super informative and awesome episode. Really appreciate Austin for coming by. Without further ado, give it a listen. Okay, we are now joined by Austin Zoutwell. She is the Expansion Policy and Performance Coordinator at the New York City Department of Education. Austin, welcome to our office. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we jump into all the fun DOE stuff, want to give you the opportunity to tell us about your background and where you went to school, a couple places you worked at before here, and kind of how you got to New York City.
Sure, yeah. So I grew up in North Carolina and then went to school in Tennessee.
Are you a Duke or Carolina fan?
Carolina, of course. Go Heels.
Shut the podcast down.
I myself am not a Tar Heel, but my brother is. So yes, go Heels. Okay. So moved to Tennessee, went to Suwannee, the University of the South, studied psychology while I was there, and played field hockey, so go sports.
Yes, go sports.
And then graduated and decided that I wanted to do a year of service, so I applied through the service agency and was accepted to a program in Austin, Texas. I worked at the State Agency for Habitat for Humanity. So if you're not familiar with Habitat, it's pretty cool. They do like the local affiliates who actually build the houses, and then there's the state organizations who help fund those local affiliates who build houses, and then there's the national, international office based in Atlanta that kind of coordinates like overall policy. So I was at the state organization in Texas doing a lot of research, policy, grant writing, and it was my first year out of college, and I was like, oh my goodness, I don't know a lot of stuff. I need to go back to school. So applied to school at UT, Hook'em, decided to focus on social work to have that social justice lens be the first one that I was looking through every day, but focused on policy and research. So while I was there, got involved at a research institute called the Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. So I was studying a lot of human trafficking, sexual assault, prostitution cases in Texas. And then that work kind of led me to see, this is a weird jump, but like rates of violence like were going up in times of chaos. So like Hurricane Harvey, women were being like dramatically more affected. So I decided to like focus my thesis on that, which took me to South Africa. South Africa was experiencing a massive drought at the time, and there was this like threat of day zero, which Cape Town would have been the first major city in the world to have to shut off tap water. So I went there and was like comparing my studies in Texas to those in South Africa, and then moved back and got to New York, and now I work for the DOE.
Wow. All right, let's go all the way back. That was awesome. Let's go back to the University of the South. Why major in psychology?
Yeah, so I actually went to Suwannee wanting to be an English major. It's a writing school. And while I was there, I was taking a lot of English classes. I still love to write and needed, it's a liberal arts school, and I needed like a science class. So took psych because I had taken it in high school. Didn't love it in high school, and I took it and realized how community-oriented psychology could be. So in rural Tennessee, we were able to like actually go into schools and implement a lot of the stuff that we were learning in the classroom. For example, like we were studying early education and body image. And so rural Appalachia has a lot of obesity issues with kids, and so we would take like nutrition lessons and exercise lessons into schools, do like research on the kids, and research I mean like study the program evaluation like side of it. And see how much kids were learning about what they were eating, and then how that would fuel their body to like want to exercise more. And so I was just like fascinated that this like class could be so brought to life in the community, and like I was getting to know different kinds of people through these classes. So transferred to a psych major, took incredible classes that I like will never forget. One in particular was really combined my love of narrative and English. Was it was a photography class and a psychology class, and so the photography students were matched with a psychology student, and we went out into the community and got to know a family. And like these families are pretty much all experiencing poverty and have been like in the community for years and years. The most powerful thing that they hold is their stories. So the psych student would narrate and like kind of put their stories into paper. Mm-hmm. And then the photography students were taking photos of this family. And at the end of the semester, we gave them like a big scrapbook.
Wow.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
So
I think, powerful.
Yeah, I think that was why psychology really appealed to me when I was there. The classes were just incredible. The professors were awesome.
That's awesome. That's great. Okay, so then you go to Texas,
mm-hmm.
And you start working for Habitat for Humanity. So you actually went to Austin to work and then decided, I'm going to go to school here.
Yes.
It wasn't the, okay, I thought it was the opposite way around. Got it. So you were there for what, two and a half years or so, I assume?
Yeah, 3 years.
Okay, so 3 years. And then from there, I know you did a couple different things that landed you at Concordia. Mm-hmm. What were those steps in between?
Yeah, so when I was in South Africa, I needed to come back to finish like a couple summer school classes. So while I was in summer school, I was applying for jobs. I was offered a full-time job at the place where I was working in Austin at the time.
Okay.
And I just had this itch for something, and I was like, I've always wanted to be in New York. So I moved to New York without a job. I had been applying all summer and nothing was really coming to fruition. I had come for like a week and interviewed with a few places. I was at the beach with my family in August, and I got a call from one of the companies, and they were like, can you come for an interview this week? And I said, yep, of course, make it a one-way flight. Brought two suitcases, got here, literally dropped my suitcases off with a friend while she was at work, walked straight into the interview. Completely bombed it. Had the worst interview I've ever had. The boss like hated me, and I could just tell. And so I put all my eggs in that basket, and I couch surfed for a month. And
nice.
I luckily did have the Concordia freelance, which was paying my rent for the month.
Got
and I said, if I don't have another job in the next 30 days, I have to go back to Austin. And on, I think, the 22nd, the DOE offered me the job. So.
Nice.
Made it 3 weeks of crazy chaos, but it worked out.
Wow. Wait, so the interview was with the DOE? Or that didn't even happen until you got here?
Oh, no, that interview, long gone.
Okay.
Yeah, private company. I have not heard from them since they said absolutely not. And I said, you're right.
We all have one of those. So talk about Concordia. What do they do? What's their mission?
Great. I love Concordia. It's a great organization. So Concordia is a really cool nonprofit based in New York, but it's an international nonprofit that is focused on creating conversations on both sides of the aisle, and putting them on an international level. So they host these massive conferences with huge names, and essentially how it works from behind the scenes, from my understanding, is that a sponsor will come to them and say, hey, we want you to talk about immigration this year at the Mexico conference. And so in Mexico, they would go and like find two really high stakes, high profile people on both sides of the aisle and kind of combine their like audiences and then put them on the stage and ask them questions. And like just like having cross aisle conversations and being able to like really put people in the room that might not believe the same thing. So it's really fascinating. I have enjoyed being a contractor for them now for their past two New York conferences.
I can imagine those get testy.
Yeah,
they
it's
can, at
it
least.
Is. You're right. And like I think one year I was working for them, there were like 17 different country presidents in the room at one point, and like it's just wild. They're hosting these massive events in accordance with the UNGA, so that's why a lot of people are in town. And so they do have really intense but very productive conversations. And I think one piece of feedback they've gotten, which they've adapted to over the years, has been, you know, you host these big speeches and then we don't really see any change come about. So what they're doing is, like, when those people speak in front of the audience, then they'll come back in backstage and they have kind of just like smaller conversations. And that was my job at the last conference, was to make sure all the people got in the room and they were there, but they've videotaped some of them they didn't videotape, and those conversations were more off the record for the leaders themselves to say, okay, so great to hear from you on stage and like be very like public focused, but like let's actually talk and build relationships. And so I think they're like really making big waves in the world, and I'm just so excited to get to work with them just a little bit each year.
Okay, so from there then you go to Ladies Get Paid. Talk about that. What is what is that? What is the organization? What do they do?
All another great organization. So again, like, I got the job with the DOE, so I work for them full time, but I freelance on the side just for a different organization. So Ladies Get Paid was a couple months after Concordia, and now I've worked with them for a couple of their conferences. They are an organization focused on promoting women in the workforce. So looking at the pay gap and saying, what can we do to target this issue and get rid of the pay gap. So they work with a lot of like younger women, but also some older women, and target like specific skill building things. So today I got an email that tomorrow they're hosting a webinar on the stock market. Like, why are women investing less in the stock market? We're missing out on millions, billions of dollars every year because we're intimidated by that, because it's a men's profession typically to like go into finance. So they have like a finance guru coming on, and she essentially said that her career started when she Googled like, what is the stock market? And so she's starting at level one and just like having a webinar with a bunch of people to say, hey, you can invest and this is how you can do it. So they literally target skills that women feel like they're not good at and promote them. I have gotten a lot out of their negotiation talks. So being confident and able to say like, I think I deserve this much, when they, when a company comes to you with a different amount, and have personally reaped a lot of benefits from that, just like seeing that it's okay to ask for money and like demand your value. So yeah, great organization. One of my best friends works there. So it's a fun client to have because I get to work with my friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great. And then that leads us to the DOE. So how did you hear about the role? How did you learn about all the things that they're doing? And here we are.
Yeah. So again, like I said, I was kind of struggling that summer to get a job, and was just like expanding my network pretty wide. And so I had a friend in Austin who knew somebody in New York. And she was a few years older than me. Her LinkedIn was super cool. She had like lived abroad and worked at the UN and done really amazing work. So I reached out and just said, hey, can we grab coffee? And she was working on my team at the time. They were hiring. She has since gone on and now works at Girls Who Code. So really, really great person. But she kind of exposed me more to the work at the DOE and said, oh, you know, my team specifically is working on recontracting daycares. Would you want to do that? And for me, the work in South Africa and in Austin had become so reactive to issues of violence and specifically like things that were happening against women, that I was looking for more of a prevention approach. And early education is something that is like the number one predeterminant of if somebody will be violent when they're older. Wow. So I was very excited to get on the other end of it. And like I had said, at Habitat Texas, I had been writing grants, and this was essentially being on the other side where I would then receive people's proposals for money. And so I felt like I wanted to learn more about what that looked like to be on the other side of the grants. So I applied, and yeah, here we are.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. I saw the Girls Olay and Girls Who Code just had a huge partnership with the Super Bowl ad, and it was like
It's an LA commercial, and I'm not going to do it justice, but the call to action at the end was basically like every tweet with this hashtag, $1 goes to Girls Who Code. And I'm just forgetting the actual hashtag, but I thought that was awesome because that's such an easy way. Like, it means nothing to you to pick up your phone and tweet whatever the hashtag was. And then boom. So that's pretty cool. Girls Who Code does amazing work.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I want to ask you about NYC H2O, and what that program is about, and if you had any, do you work directly with them?
So I just did a couple months with them. I was writing, or actually doing research for grants. So the founder of New York City H2O is a really great guy. He actually lives across the street from me.
Nice.
And so he had reached out because we had connected on LinkedIn through the DOE, and so we went on a walk. He's a very outdoorsy guy, super cool nature guru, and he was explaining to me his needs, and his needs were like, I want to learn more about how to find government funding, so I was helping with that. But New York City H2O is really cool. It's an after-school program mainly for kids, and he gets them out to like watersheds and does water ecology education through tours and field trips. So it's mainly just like exposing children to New York City's water and like how they can help preserve the like natural water that we have.
Got it.
Yeah, very cool. Very small organization. And yeah, like I said, I just did a couple months with them.
Very cool. Got it. Okay, well, I want to ask about Mayor de Blasio's Pre-K for All initiative, which has been a huge win for him and something that he's super proud of and he should be. Obviously, he's super important for families throughout the city. Have other cities copied this? Have other cities followed suit since he launched this at all that you may know of?
Yeah. Yes, so this is exactly what I work on. So in 2013, there were only 19,000 students in pre-K, and Mayor de Blasio launched this effort in 2014. Now we offer any student a spot in pre-K, and so we're at like over 70,000 students. We're currently rolling out 3K for All. So in the 2020 school year, currently there are only 14 districts that are announced, but he's hoping to roll it out by 2021 to all. So those 14 districts do span across all five boroughs. So if you apply for 3K, you could likely get in. It just might not be in the district that you live in.
Got it.
And then in 2021, there will be services for income eligible students starting at 2 weeks old. So essentially New York City for income eligible students will have services from 2 weeks old to 18.
Wow.
So yeah. The second part of your question, I did a little bit of research to see how other cities are following suit, and it's pretty cool. So there's definitely a national movement, and I'm going to read from this like NIEER NEAR study that they did a couple of years ago. So I'm sure that more cities are getting better and learning more and expanding their services to more students. But at the time that they did this study, they were looking at reaching out to like students, and they defined accessibility as like it hitting at least 30% of like pre-K students in your city.
Got
and then also the quality, and they based it on the near pre-K quality policy benchmarks. So of all the cities that have pre-K, which is like over 50 major cities in the US, there were five that got the gold, which means they had both of those two things. And out of those five, I have lived in or near all five of them. So it's Boston, I lived there for a summer, Charlotte, that's where I'm from, Nashville, I went to school outside of Nashville, New York City, and then San Antonio, where I lived in Austin. So yeah.
So people are following along.
Yes, people are following along.
It's clearly working. I mean, when he came out with this idea, or any idea of this magnitude, I mean, how long does it take to really kind of take hold?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like, so you said he came up with the idea in 2014. Obviously, it's a slow rollout. There's only certain communities, certain districts that can do it. I think now it's pretty much full-fledged, I mean, it's out there. I mean, it's not like people don't know about it, parents are clamoring for it. I mean, how long does an initiative like this take to really launch?
Mm-hmm. Great. So actually just last week, another study came out that studied New York specifically in the Community Schools Initiative that, again, started in 2014. So this increased focus on the implementation of holistic education is what they were looking at. So they assessed the impact from the 2017 to 2018 school year. So just in those first 3 years, right? So 2014 to 2017, here are the positive effects that have happened. Student attendance went up for all students in all grades across all 3 years of the study. The community schools had a positive impact on time grade progression in all 3 years of the study and on graduation rates in high school. That was only for two of the 3 years, so maybe a little bit slower of a rollout there. It led to a reduction in disciplinary incidents for elementary and middle school students. The reduction in high school students has yet to be statistically significant.
Got it.
Math achievement has gone up in the third year. Credit accumulation for high school students across all 3 years of the study went up. Teachers reported that shared responsibility for students and success, like having their own agency in schools, increased in elementary and middle school students in 2 years of the study, the second 2 years. And then authors also found a positive effect on students' sense of connectedness to adults and peers for elementary and middle school students. So I think it's having effects already. I think a lot of just I can say from my experience with daycare is the immediate effects of having a place for your child to go while you can work.
Yeah.
These short-term effects are hopefully going to have long-lasting benefits, but as you know, we can't really do research on something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
We're really hoping that this increase in accessibility and quality of care for children will have lasting impacts on this generation that New York City will hopefully see in the near future.
Yeah, for sure. How can community organizations like ours here at Kids in the Game get more involved with the DOE, whether it's with programming, planning, strategy, all that stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, as a DOE employee, only can help daycares apply for full day services. But as somebody who worked for New York City H2O, there are all sorts of city RFPs that are released that you can log on to this really archaic system called HHS Accelerator and learn about. And so that's a way that I've seen after school programs get funding. But I've also seen really interesting work being done in the community by people the daycare community or daycare council, and they have a lot of influence at City Hall. So if you...
Daycare council.
Yeah, the Daycare Council, they are one of many organizations that's at scale taking the concerns of teachers or schools and hearing those concerns and then being able to have a broad influence in City Hall by saying hey, we have 800 teachers right now that are upset that they're not getting paid XYZ amount, and I've witnessed them make changes. My job was delayed by a year because of those changes, which is really awesome and something that every DOE employee is advocating for and wants the community to get stronger for teachers and schools. But sometimes we don't necessarily have the voice to be able to do that. So community organizations like that are really instrumental for our schools to get better.
What is next on the horizon for you guys?
Yeah, so we are releasing award notifications in the summer of 2020 for the schools that just applied. We're recontracting the whole city.
Nice.
So largest procurement in New York City's human service history is through our team. So it will be a contract for 5 years, so we don't really know what's on the horizon after the summer. There's been rumblings of different projects that our team would take on because we essentially write the RFPs, release them, and talk to the community about them. then go through the reading of the applications, and then we award them, and then we pass them off to the readiness team. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming the readiness team will need a little bit more help, so my job might change over the next year. We might be doing different stuff than we've done before, but I'll be excited to see what happens.
Awesome. For people who want to do some research or find you or NYC Schools DOE, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm active on LinkedIn, so feel free to reach out. My first name's Austin, A-U-S-T-E-N, last name's Outwell, really long, Z-O-U-T-E-W-E-L-L-E. But to learn more about early education, there's a plethora of resources online that you can read about. New York City DOE has a lot of them linked on their website, so I'd encourage folks to go there.
Nice. Last question, which I did not send you prior, and I apologize. Some people say it's the hardest, but you've been in New York for how long?
2 years.
Okay, so you should have a good answer. What is your favorite slice of pizza?
Oh, no. Okay, so this is really gross. You don't want to know. So you really like barbecue chicken pizza.
Okay.
But then I put pineapple on it.
Listen, weird. We will accept it. But wait, but is there a place you get this at? Or are you just talking about making pizza?
There's a place on my street called Little Geo's that I really like. It's just
and
like
they make barbecue chicken pizza with pineapple?
Yeah. I'll ask them to add the pineapple and they look at me weird every
time. They look at you crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry to all New York residents.
So wait. So Little Geo's, where is this?
On First Avenue and First Street.
First Avenue and First Street, mm-hmm. Little Geo's. Okay.
Yeah. Go all check right. it out.
And you have to get this slice, the barbecue chicken with pineapple?
I mean, I don't think other people like it, so I'm not going to.
So just get the cheese.
Just get the cheese.
Okay. Little Geo's. Awesome. Austin, thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it. This was great.
Yeah,
Enjoyed getting to know you and your story and all the good stuff you guys are doing.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram @KidsInTheGameNY and Facebook @KidsInTheGameNYC.